are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, June 24th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Bernie Sanders proposes big student jet debt jubilee. There's a credible accusation that the President of the United States committed rape. Oddly, a non-story. Meanwhile, Ted Cruz may have accidentally saved the retirement of millions of people in this country. And Donald Trump's administration's massive corruption, not a surprise to them. ICE concentration camps slammed for more mistreatment of children. The Istanbul mayor race, a major rebuke to Erdogan. Meanwhile, that time Joe Biden got his pocket picked and we all paid the price. And Trump's agricultural department puts its head in the dirt when it comes to climate change. Lastly, Felix Sater, once again, very oddly, avoids testifying. All this and more on today's program. Consistent listeners, longtime listeners of this program, will be aware that I have a little bit of an obsession with Felix Sater.
A little bit.
Which is a function of the late Wayne Barrett, who was a multi-decade, 30-year-long reporter with the Village Voice. He may not have been with the Village Voice the entire time, but he covered Donald Trump for decades. And he had lung cancer the last several years of his life. He covered Donald Trump like no one else in the country for years. At one point, I think Donald Trump tried to buy him out, essentially. And
Let's make a deal.
And we had Wayne on once, maybe twice, in the run-up to the election. And I had spoken to him just a little bit about this as well. And the thing he kept saying over and over again is Felix Sater. And Felix Sater, of course, was the guy who was negotiating the Trump Tower in Russia. Felix Sater is, by all accounts, is reported to be an asset for the CIA and the FBI. So much so that Loretta Lynch, when she was the U.S. attorney running the Eastern District of Manhattan, wrote an affidavit saying what a great guy and how helpful he was when he was on trial for stabbing a guy in the face with a champagne flute, I think it was.
Because he's smart.
He also supposedly, according to reporting, I think this was in the Washington Post, was responsible for getting the cell phone, bin Laden's cell phone, that led to his assassination.
Wow.
He was a money launderer.
So he's kind of like a hero to you in a way, too.
A hero to
you? Sort of, I could see you kind of admiring him in some ways.
The champagne flute thing?
No, well, I was giving you more credit than that. I was the phone number thing, the money laundering.
All the things I aspire to. He's an interesting guy. He also was literally working for the Trump Inc. During this time. And I imagine was being run out of the New York FBI office. Money laundering as a way of giving people, giving these agencies information about the movement of money. It's probably weapons, a whole host of things. And I suspect one of the things he was laundering money from other places into this place, the United States. And I suspect that it landed somewhere in apartments owned by Donald Trump. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I have theories about it, but they're all half-baked theories. But for some reason, you know, he's testified, but apparently they were calling him back. And they were supposed to do this like 3 or 4 months ago. And it just sort of, they punted for no reason, it seemed. And he was supposed to come in on Friday. Overslept. Didn't feel good.
Fridays are tough.
Yeah, Fridays are tough. He claimed he had claimed the Michael Brooks Amendment and didn't show up because he was sick.
Wait, there's an amendment? All right, guys. Have a great rest of the show.
It's constitutional now.
I'll see you guys maybe not necessarily soon.
But there's some story around him, and I suspect it has to do with the reported mutiny that was taking place at the New York FBI office in the fall of 2016. But who knows? Just interesting, strange stuff coming out of there. So, all right. With that said, I don't know why I went on that tangent because we were talking about Felix Sater.
Yeah, because of Felix Sater.
Felix Sater.
That's your guy.
That's my guy. I enjoy that guy. He's very enjoyable for me to follow. Because we were talking about how he was going to supposedly finally going to testify. And then sure enough.
Did you ever watch X-Files?
Yeah.
So there's like the cigarette smoking man who's like kind of the mysterious one.
The smoker, I think they
Those were the storylines I was always interested in, but I watched on TNT and it was kind of out of order. But then you often would get just the monster of the week type storylines, and those were less interesting. Right. I think Felix Sater is sort of like the cigarette smoking man of this Trump saga.
Right. It's true. He always seems to come back into the picture and then just sort of slides out. Don't know what that's about. All right. Meanwhile, as you know, towards the end of last week, Donald Trump either found out that people were going to die if he bombed Iran at one point or maybe later, or they didn't tell him at first, and then they launched an attack and then he called it back, or they didn't actually launch an attack that they were going to. Who knows what the real answer is? It does not seem that far-fetched to imagine that Donald Trump was like, I'm going to show them that I'm the good guy, the merciful guy, and then they'll make a deal with me that will be better or just like the Obama deal, but it'll be the Trump deal.
So a better deal.
I honestly think that's what he's thinking, but he's functioning with a juvenile mind, and meanwhile, he has people working for him who desperately want to get into a war. And who knows? Maybe it'll work. I mean, did you see Home Alone or Home Alone 2? You know, a child did quite well against those other people. So who knows? We're in sort of uncharted territory.
Trump
here.
Was in Home Alone 2.
Yeah,
correct?
Trump's booby trapping the Oval Office.
Yeah, Trump's just like, and then the nails will hit him on the turban.
Yeah, it's going to be good. Throw hot water at him.
This mustache is going red for Bolton's mustache. And
the problem is, of course, is that the media and the establishment of this country really has a hard time with the reflexive desire to fire something at somebody if there's any opportunity. It's the responsible thing to do. We saw this with Syria, where I personally was on television with a half a dozen people of all political persuasions, all saying the exact same thing. We need to have a strike on Syria. And some of them would be like, and then come up with a plan as to how we're going to deal with this. The one area where they'll trust Donald Trump, apparently, is just in war making, which is absurd. Bernie Sanders was on Face the Nation this weekend and came right up against that sort of knee-jerk sense of like, well, wait a second. The most responsible thing is to have at least a strike, right? I mean, we have to launch something.
Was President Trump's decision this week to call off that strike the right one?
See, it's like somebody setting a fire to a basket full of paper and then putting it out. He helped create the crisis, and then he stopped the attacks. The idea that we're looking at a president of the United States who, number one, thinks that a war with Iran is something that might be good for this country.
He was just doing a limited strike.
Oh, just a limited strike. Oh, well, I'm sorry. I just didn't know that it's okay to simply attack another country with bombs, just a limited strike. That's an act of warfare.
That's the best clip of the whole campaign season.
It is amazing. I mean, he's clearly, you know, Bernie Sanders goes in there with a sense of like the gravity of that moment. I don't think that he's the only one out there, although you don't see many examples of this, frankly, where the flippant. It's just a limited strike. When Donald Trump can at least pretend that he cares about 150 lives more than you can, you know, you have a problem. But that's the thing, is that there is a, and it has been like this for decades. Maybe it was like this beforehand, although I don't know. Where to be taken seriously within this, the mainstream media and I guess the mainstream circles, you need to just pretend that it's like a visit to a grocery store or something. That it's nothing. Never mind the fact that it would be like lighting a match in a room full of gasoline fumes. But the limited, it's just a limited strike.
It's extraordinary.
Not a full on war.
It's like a strikey-wake.
It's not a.
I mean, she didn't even do the like. Sort of like, hey, let me he's about to attack his opponent, let me encourage that, which they like to do as well. Like, how do you mean incompetent? How do you mean he set a bunch of papers on fire? It was more like, well, he said limited, Bernie nutcase.
Just a limited.
It's not like
strike.
The mother of all bombs.
We did in Afghanistan. It was nothing.
Hey, folks, speaking of which, the World Health Organization has named the health epidemic of the 21st century. Do you know what it is? Stress. I hope no one's surprised by that. We're feeling more uncertainty and anxiety than ever before. Wonder why that might be. That's why we're partnering with Calm. It's the number one rated app for meditation. When you meditate, your brain chemistry changes. Meditation has been shown to slow down the release of stress chemicals into your bloodstream, like cortisol and adrenaline, giving you some much-needed relief. With Calm, you discover a whole library of simple, guided meditations on themes like anxiety, creativity, focus. They even have other resources to help you relax, like sleep stories, music, and more. So if you're stressed, take a deep breath and get calm. Right now, Majority Report listeners get 25% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/majority. That's calm.com/majority. 40 million people have downloaded Calm. Find out why at calm.com/majority. All right, we're going to get obviously to Bernie's big proposal about the debt jubilee. It's actually fairly straightforward. Lot less, well, not a lot less, but less complicated than other plans like this, because it's just, it's all in.
Just do it.
We will get to that in a bit, though, but we really have an unbelievably severe, to the extent that there is a crisis now at the border, it is one of our violation of human rights. And there have been multiple reports over the weekend to this effect of conditions at these migrant children's detention facilities. The AP went down there, did some investigation in some of these facilities. In one instance, in McAllen, Texas, it's reported in the Huffington Post, four toddlers were so severely ill and neglected at a U.S. Border Patrol facility in McAllen that lawyers forced the government to hospitalize them last week. The children were all under the age of three, with teenage mothers or guardians. They were feverish, coughing, vomiting, and had diarrhea. Some of the toddlers and infants were refusing to eat or drink. One two-year-old's eyes were rolled back in her head, and she was completely unresponsive, according to Toby Galeka, a Florida-based attorney. Another mother at the same facility had a premature baby who was listless and wrapped in a dirty towel. Lawyers feared if they had not shown up at the facility, the sick kids would have received zero medical attention, potentially died. This has been ongoing. There's more of this. Here is an interview with Warren Binford. She is a law professor at Willamette University. She tours these facilities, has been doing so for a long time. Look, there's been problems with these facilities prior to this, but they have never been this extreme and extensive.
As I mentioned, you were inside this Texas facility. Can you just give us some sense of what it is you saw inside?
Yes, basically what we saw are dirty children who are malnourished, who are being severely neglected. They are being kept in inhumane conditions. They are essentially being warehoused, as many as 300 children in a cell with almost no adult supervision. We have children caring for other young children. For example, we saw a little boy in diapers, or he had no diapers on. He should have had a diaper on. He was 2 years old, and when I asked why he didn't have diapers on, I was told he didn't need it. He immediately urinated, and he was in the care of another child. Children cannot take care of children, and yet that's how they are trying to run this facility. The children are hardly being fed anything nutritious, and they are being medically neglected. We're seeing a flu outbreak, and we're also seeing a lice infestation. It is we have children sleeping on the floor. It's the worst conditions I've ever witnessed in several years of doing these inspections.
And to be clear here, in this interview, the interviewer, Brangham, said, what you describe is really hard to put our heads around, that this is inside a U.S. government facility. I wonder, what do we know about these children's parents? Were they coming across the border alone? Did they come with families and separated? How did they get here? Binford says almost none of the children that we interviewed had come across the border themselves alone. They came across the border with family, and they're trying to get reunited with family who are living in the United States. Almost every child I interview had family, parents, uncles, aunts, grandparents, siblings here in the United States who are waiting for them and ready to care for them. They're not being released to these people, or these people are afraid to come to get them because they have been scared. I mean, that has been the strategy that ICE has been following. And it's insane. Disgusting, and it's insane. She went on to say, what I'm hearing from the Border Patrol officers who spoke to us privately in the hallways, they don't want the children there. Many of them are parents themselves. They know these children don't belong there, and they need to be with their families. They're saying that ORR, that's the Office of Refugee Resettlement, and ICE, are not coming to pick up these children and process them so that they can be reunited for their families. I mean, this is all being done on purpose. The administration wants to project that they are willing to be sadistic. They think somehow it's going to magically make the situations in these people's home countries seem that much less severe and dangerous, which, of course, is absurd. And I don't know if it's just, you know, that stories like this, they find them disgusting. But I'm not convinced that the Trump people don't feel like this is going to help us. There was a story, I just saw the headline, where a guy responded. I don't know if there's video of this. Where he said, where a Trump voter was basically like, I don't appreciate being told that I could feel bad for these kids. I mean, I feel bad for kids, but it's up to their parents to deal with this stuff. I shouldn't bring them here. They're endangering the kids. That's psycho. Psycho-authoritarian stuff.
Sadistic psycho-authoritarian. And you're not on, like, you're out. You're not on the human team, if you could say something like that.
Meanwhile, there's an ongoing case. If you've been following this at all, during the Clinton administration, I think it was, or even maybe prior to that, actually, maybe it ended in the Clinton administration, there was an agreement reached when four migrant children brought a suit against the United States for their treatment in these facilities, a lawsuit. They hammered out an agreement called the Flores Agreement, and one of the plaintiffs' name was Flores. She was, I think, 10, 12, not sure exactly the same age. She was in a facility with adults for months. Horrible situation, obviously. And the Flores Agreement basically limits the amount of time that children who have parents can be separated from those parents and held. And specifically, if the parents are not charged with any type of criminal offense. It also says that they need to be cared for. Now, this is a suit that was actually brought prior to Donald Trump's administration. And to be fair here, the lawyer from the DOJ is simply trying to argue that the trial judge changed the standard. But it really is grotesque, and it tells a story of what's going on. The very least, it tells a story that ICE needs to be abolished. Here is the Department of Justice lawyer trying to argue to the Ninth Circuit that sanitary conditions and safe conditions should be really narrowly interpreted.
Are you really going to stand up and tell us that being able to sleep isn't a question of safe and sanitary conditions? You can't be safe and sanitary or safe as a human being if you can't sleep.
Well,
and you said in your briefs it doesn't say anything about sleeping, so therefore there's nothing in here about being able to sleep.
I think the concern there is, Your Honor, the court finding that sleep, for example, falls under, is relevant to a finding of no safe and sanitary conditions is one thing. But the ultimate conclusion is safe and sanitary is a singular category in the agreement. And it was one has to assume left that way and not enumerated by the parties because either the parties couldn't reach agreement on how to enumerate that or that it was left to the agencies to determine.
Or
really.
It was relatively obvious, and at least obvious enough so that if you're putting people into a crowded room to sleep on a concrete floor with an aluminum foil blanket on top of them, that doesn't comply with the agreement. I mean, it may be that they don't get super thread counts Egyptian linens. I get that. But the testimony that the district judge believed was it's really cold. In fact, it gets colder when we complain about it as being cold. We're forced to sleep crowded with the lights on all night long. And all you had to put us on is the concrete floor with an aluminum blanket. I mean, I understand it's some outer boundary. There may be some definitional difficulty, but no one would argue that this is secure and sanitary, safe and sanitary.
Which is your strongest argument then?
All right, and let's let, there's another clip of that same exchange, essentially, a little bit later. And here they argue, again, that safety and sanitation apparently means nothing.
Safe and sanitary.
Which is your strongest argument, then?
Well, I mean, I think what I would go to is that when you start enumerating, for example, specific hygiene items, and the way that was done is that the court sort of enumerated these and say these fall under the rubric, these fall in the category of what could be required.
Again, it wasn't perfume soap, it was soap. It wasn't, you know, high-class milled soap, it was soap.
It's within everybody's common understanding that, you know, if you don't have a toothbrush, if you don't have soap, if you don't have a blanket, it's not safe and sanitary. Well, wouldn't everybody agree to that? Do you agree to that?
Well, I think those are, there's fair reason to find that those things may be part of safe and sanitary.
Maybe, are a part. What do you say, maybe? You mean there are circumstances when a person doesn't need to have a toothbrush, toothpaste, and soap for days?
Well, I think in CBP custody, it's frequently intended to be much shorter term. So it may be that for a shorter term stay in CBP custody, that some of those things may not be required.
Yeah, but I don't think that was the situation that the court was confronting. I mean, it wasn't as though those people were there for 12 hours and then moved on to the Hilton Hotel. No, they were there for a fairly sustained period. And at least according to the evidence that the judge believed, they weren't getting these things.
And there you have it. I mean, this may be a case that essentially started with the Obama administration, but I can't imagine that the Obama administration is going to send somebody from the DOJ in there to make that argument. That's a pretty weak argument. Sanitary doesn't include soap or toothbrush or bed. Never mind, we're talking about children. We're talking about children. And so you have these reports of children under the age of 3 who all had to be sent to the hospital, not by the customs border officials, but by lawyers who went in to examine them. You have children taking care of children. You have them punishing some of these kids in some instances by having them all sleep on the floor. No soap, no toothbrushes. The facilities are completely overrun because they keep taking more children. They slow walk the processing of them. And they discourage family from picking them up. And people are very concerned about the other people calling them concentration camps, because that's rude. That's a really rude thing to do. They're short-term hostels. They're youth hostels, essentially, that you can't leave. Here, AOC shows every Democratic lawmaker, really just about anybody, how you respond when the Trump administration's defenders pretend to be outraged that you would use the word concentration camp for this stuff.
Mind if I ask you your reaction to Minority Leader McCarthy saying that you should apologize for the comparison between concentration camps and detention centers?
Well, I think he should apologize for the deliberate conflation and attack on these terms. I think he should apologize for the conditions that he's supporting on the border. He should apologize to the children that have been separated from their parents. He should apologize for his support for widespread human rights abuses. That's what he should apologize for. And until he stops supporting the absolute dehumanizing conditions on our border, I will not apologize for holding him to account for it.
I like how she does that with smile at the end. How's that? You wanted a quote? There's your quote.
That's what concentration camp means. I mean, I needed to get into the pedantry and read the Merriam-Webster dictionary definition of concentration camp. And one of the definitions is a place where a certain category of people, including refugees, specifically mentioned there, are detained. That's what the word means.
Yes.
I mean, to even let yourself get distracted into an argument about definitions while in administration is literally torturing and kidnapping children is already a huge failure. But even on those annoying, pedant, should not even be being discussed grounds, they're wrong. That's what the term means.
Let's talk a little bit about Bernie Sanders' student debt jubilee, as it were. I don't think that's what they're calling it, but it's a proposal that involves canceling. And, well, we should just set it up this way. As you know, Elizabeth Warren proposed $640 billion in student debt forgiveness. Julian Castro apparently has a even more modest proposal. Warren's proposal would forgive up to $50,000 in student debt for those earning $100,000 or for about 42 million people. Castro's is a little bit more Byzantine and but also reduces some of the debt. Bernie Sanders' proposal is a little more straightforward. You have student debt, it'll be forgiven. On top of which, his new plan calls for public four-year colleges and community colleges. These are all public universities, right? So not every college, not the majority of colleges, not private colleges or universities, but public colleges. Each state has a public university. I think each state does.
Yes.
And each state has a public university. That would be free. Now, this is sounds like a radical idea. We had this 30, 40 years ago, 50 years ago. I don't know if it was exactly free, but if you were in a state, your in-state tuition, it's still less than if you're out of state for some places. But it was at zero or near zero. New York, California, Michigan, other states had this. But we have cut back austerity, tax cuts, less money coming from the federal government, et cetera, et cetera. And as the cost of these public universities and colleges goes up, that creates upward pressure on the tuition of private universities. So people, the debt is not just the issue. The cost of public of higher education has just gone through the roof. Doubled, tripled over the past 15, 20 years. More. And how do you slow that? You slow it by giving a public option where people are like, I don't need to go into debt. I can go and get a good education for free. Sanders proposes to have a transaction tax on Wall Street, which has been shown that it should have absolutely no impact on anything other than the trades that take place on Wall Street. And it would be for high volume traders. So these stories about pensions paying big, there should not be high volume trading in your pension account. I should tell you that right now. If you have a pension account where there's high volume trading, your broker is ripping you off. Sanders' bill also includes $1.3 billion a year for low-income students at historically black colleges and universities. So in other words, there would be subsidies for people attending black colleges and universities because I think it's obvious. Maybe people don't understand this, but for most of our history in this country, our government has had policies that have prevented black people from gaining wealth. Our society, for all of our history, ongoing, has had not policies, but reactions and dynamics that have prevented black people from building wealth. And when you can't build wealth, you don't give it back to your universities. So the idea is to build these universities, build their endowments, build the opportunities for people graduating from there. And it'll be $48 billion a year to eliminate tuition and fees at public schools and universities. So what do you do if you're trying to argue against a policy that so quite obviously is extremely appealing to a large mass of people in the American public? And we will address the question of subsidizing the middle class and the upper middle class in terms of universities here. Because let's be clear on who has to borrow money, right? And what do you do? We'll put that aside for the moment. What do you do if you're trying to argue against this? And you know that everyone watching your TV show actually is like, I would like this. Well, of course, you could just say the name of a country, and maybe that would help.
Bernie Sanders later today is going to have a proposal 2 days before the big debates down in Miami. He is talking about eliminating $1.6 trillion worth of student debt. It would impact 45 million Americans. It would pay for, and the way they would pay for it is he would levy a 0.5% tax on Wall Street stock exchanges. And they say it could raise $2 trillion over 10 years.
Free, free, free.
Free, free, free.
And here's his tweet. Bernie Sanders finds himself, every time he looks at the polls, he gets worse. So here's what he's doing. This is a truly revolutionary proposal, if he does say so himself. All Americans will get the college education or job training they need while having all student debt forgiven. We'll bail out Wall Street in 08. It's time to tax Wall Street's greed to help the American people. So Bernie Sanders taking on Wall Street, not unique. Paying off everybody's student loans and giving people the sense that I can take out money and not have to pay it back is a concept I'm not familiar with. For those people who are looked at as now suckers who have paid back their student loan and worked hard to do it, that is must be very hard pill to swallow. On top of that, the issue is perfect. Student debt really resonates, especially with the middle class. Lower class tends to get much more grants. Upper class can afford it. The middle class says, what about us? We'll give you loans. Next thing you know, you owe tens of thousands of dollars, and you're trying to get your first job. So the parents got to help out, as well as the kids wants to help out. The kid can't move out. So therefore, it's a cycle that I think we can address.
Yeah.
Pause it. Now, wait a second. Now, apparently, Kilmeade has a secret plan to address this, but it does not involve with anything that has been offered by anybody on the Democratic side. And of course, nobody on the Republican side has offered anything. Like, that's the problem. They start to talk about it, and halfway through their presentation, they realize, like, wait a second, this is a problem.
He's trying to generate a database of black billionaires.
Right, exactly. Who are going to pay off? Right.
Kilmeade's doing that move that Bernie made fun of with that FDR clip he responded to Hickenlooper with. It's like, cross my heart and hope to die. I want to do all these things, and we're not going to cost, it's not going to cost anybody a penny.
Right. Exactly.
Precisely.
And, but he realizes as he's saying it, like, oh, we this is something we got to, I'm sure we could take care of this in some way.
Kilmeade always accidentally gets into some quasi right position.
All right.
Yeah, look, there are a lot of people who cannot simply afford to send their kids to college, and they hear this and they love the idea. It is very powerful. If you've ever been to a Bernie Sanders rally, there are a lot of people who are in desperate situation, and they look to the federal government for help.
Well, free sounds really good. Talk to the people in Venezuela and see how free worked right. out for them. And also to note, it's not just the rich people that will end up paying for this debt forgiveness. Working class people who maybe didn't even go to college are going to end up subsidizing the college education of people who are now going to make a lot more money because they went to college.
Plus, it would be a 0.5% levy.
Pause it. Now, she doesn't really say how these people are going to subsidize this. The transaction tax is so small that it's only if you trade a lot. Pensions do not trade a lot. And if they do, you are getting ripped off. The whole idea of pensions is buy, hold large assets, classes of assets, don't do a lot of trading. Hold it for 25 years, 35 years, whatever it is.
I like how she's sitting there clearly like, can I, Venezuela?
Venezuela? I be the one who gets to say Venezuela?
She's so thirsty say Venezuela.
I think Rachel Campos Duffy needs a few more weeks in a double A ball.
Yeah, I think so. I think we need to get sent back to Fox Streaming Live or whatever their internet property is.
End up subsidizing the college education of people who are now going to make a lot more money because they went to college.
Plus, it would be a 0.5% levy, tax levy on all stock transactions. So if you got a 401k,
that's right.
If you have any of that stuff, that could be impacted. Bernie's going to lay out further plans later on. In the meantime, what do you think about it? Ken emailed, I hear many Democrats telling everybody free health care, free college, free child care with no out-of-pocket costs. What they're not saying is it will be out of your paycheck.
Right. You
and
can.
Maybe a loss of freedom in that as well. A tweet from
Pause
David.
It. Well, it's not going to come out of your paycheck because, again, it's a financial, it's a transaction tax on trades themselves. So it's not going to come out of your paycheck. And in terms of your freedom, I guess, is she suggesting that what's going to happen is if you avail yourself of this, you're going to be rendered and flown to Venezuela?
That's right. That's actually, I don't know why you would read the secret part of the plan like that.
I probably
so if you could just sign right here, that would be great. And dot in the eye and okay, get this little brick, on the way to Caracas.
Is it will be out of your paycheck.
Right, and maybe a loss of freedom in that as well.
Yeah.
A tweet from David. It's great that all these college kids would get a tuition forgiven under Bernie's plan while my wife and I are saving and budgeting so we can cash flow to college tuition.
Pause it. Well, I've got some good news for David. He can send his kids to a well-funded public institution under Bernie's plan and take that cash flow.
It's a yacht, baby.
Or invest in your kids' future, or a lot of opportunity for you there. Now, if you also have been saving and budgeting, good for you.
That's money you can spend on other stuff.
Like, yeah. Nobody likes to have Bernie unexpected like, windfalls.
Listen, David, how about you go down to the local marine retailer and buy a new pontoon and name it the SS Bernie Sanders?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
there's nothing more uncomfortable than having a huge cash windfall that you didn't expect.
I really wanted to give this to universities. Yeah. Damn it.
God damn it.
Larry says, I had to work hard to pay off my student loans. Will I get all that back? I agree. That's what I'm picturing, Larry. You're very proud, ripping out that last coupon, which I remember doing, out the last coupon, saying that I no longer have to pay that dollar amount every single month. I think you could work on the interest rate on these loans, why the government took them over. It doesn't seem to be working out. But going into their two-day debate.
Pause it. Wait a second. You could work on the interest rates on these loans? Like eliminate the interest? I mean, is he willing to do that? He's starting to come like around the Julian Castro plan. I mean, they realize there's a massive problem here. And as far as Larry, will he get those back? Well, I'll tell you what Larry will get back. I don't know what Larry does for a living. But the number one thing inhibiting housing starts in this country, according to the national housing construction organization is student debt. To forgive that student debt is a huge stimulus to the economy. Huge stimulus to the economy with people who are going to go out and buy new homes, buy existing homes. They're going to go out and do other things, free them up to do more socially useful jobs. So Larry will get a benefit. It will not be a direct one, but he will get a benefit. And then once those are off and the financial transaction tax is still there, guess what, Larry? You could start
coming.
To lobby for more benefits.
Yeah.
Because Larry. We've already had that transaction tax. It will also probably stabilize some of assets in the stock market as well. There's also a lot of other beneficial qualities to that.
Yeah. I don't know. If the strongest public argument you have is sullen people who already paid off their student debts, it's weak. Sad.
Well, it's funny
also,
that it's funny
you should
that,
have paid it all off on once. I didn't because I'm smart.
Well, it's also funny that, like, you know, what about the people? Why aren't you also pissed that college is not free anymore like it was 30 years ago?
Right.
Like, there's a
there
whole
go.
Host of things to be upset
you
about.
You have a very
you're
specific
have that
window
attitude.
In the 80s and early 90s where you can just be really angry. I guess you did get it on both ends. Because I was going to say, when did Larry go to college? But definitely not in the 60s, because he wouldn't have had anything to pay off.
Yeah.
Larry. Ken and
I
Larry.
I want to just tell you this one brief story. Now, I should also just make you aware of the fact that we are waiting over the next couple of days. I think there's only like maybe another 2 weeks where we're going to hear the Supreme Court's decision on the census question. This is the whether there is a compelling state interest in putting on the 2020 census the question of immigration status. Again, reminder, the Constitution of the United States calls for a census of every living person in the United States at the time of the census, not citizen, not fetus. Not that that's implicated, although it's odd that our founding fathers did not want every fetus to be counted. For those originalists, they want every living person to be counted. And there is a lot of studies, academic studies, that have shown that if you ask that question, you will not get a full accounting. In fact, it turns out one of those studies was not academic. It was performed by a guy known as the gerrymander king of the Republican Party, who came up with all the gerrymandering maps and strategies in 2010. He did some research on the implications for a Texas congressional district and found, quote, that it would help non-Hispanic white people and Republicans in their electoral chances. He handed that information and lobbied members of the Trump transition team to have the Department of Justice insist on asking this question, ostensibly to help with the Voting Rights Act, which is laughable because this administration couldn't be more hostile to the Voting Rights Act, and to ask it of Commerce. And now it's been revealed that he had direct contact with members of the Commerce Department. We know this because even though the guy died, apparently his daughter found his hard drives. And all of this came out about the hard drives, about the communications, about the creating the alibi to ask this question after the Department of Justice and Commerce had lied about it in court cases. So we're going to see two things. One, if we're going to have a severe undercount with our census, one that is designed to empower Republicans, and two, We're going to find out if the Supreme Court has even a shred of concern about how they look as they make their partisan decisions. Even a shred. All you would need is the tiniest fiber of concern that your legitimacy, that you even have a veneer, the thinnest veneer of legitimacy, to say we cannot include this question in there after what's been revealed. But who knows? We're going to find out. There are other gerrymandering questions that are actually out there that we're going to be hearing about. And undoubtedly, there's going to be some cases where we see language in these cases that don't have direct bearing on the cases themselves, but will indicate machinations by the court to overturn some precedents. I think we know what we're talking about. Roe v. Wade, others. Others that would make it impossible. In fact, there was a ruling recently, I don't have it in front of me, where the ability for Congress to delegate to regulatory agencies the last 2 miles of any statute. So in other words, Congress does not know what constitutes pollutants, let's say, in water. Congress does not know the intricacies of how pollutants get into water. I'm making this up, but more or less the case. So what they have been doing over the history of our government, at least in modern times, is they delegate to the EPA. The idea is we want our water clean. We want our water, you know, clean enough based upon these standards. Go to it. Figure out how to do it. And then the EPA determines what are contaminants. The EPA determines how this gets into the waterways, et cetera, which is why there is such a problem with having a Republican administration or one that's hostile to environmental protection, because they have the ability to go in and basically say, okay, we're going to pull back on a lot of this stuff. And in this era, we see lawsuits brought against the EPA because they think they have the latitude to not enforce laws that they are then forced by the courts to enforce. But the Supreme Court now, the right wingers on the court, have started to indicate in dicta, that's the reasoning behind some other cases, that would put this principle in jeopardy, that Congress can no longer delegate this authority to agencies and has to get extremely specific with regulatory schemes, one that is almost too impossible for them to get. And it would basically destroy the regulatory state. Worker protections, consumer protections, environmental protections. All of these things would be essentially wiped away. So we will keep an eye on that stuff and more. We're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. Reminder, this show is supported by folks like you. You keep this show alive by becoming a member of the program. You can go to jointhemajorityreport.com and become a member of the show. You get access to the archives. You can go on the app and just search any word and find our stuff. And we have all sorts of fun like
Felix
that.
Sater.
Felix Sater. Depending on how our show notes have been at any given period of the show.
Good luck.
We've gotten better recently. So jointhemajorityreport.com, just pennies a day. Also, reminder, last week we were sponsored by Hunt a Killer. And Hunt a Killer is a monthly subscription game where you become a detective immersed in a murder mystery. so interactive and convincing that it looks and feels real. Right now, for our listeners, you can go to huntakiller.com/majority for 20% off your first box. They only accept 200 members per day, so hurry to take advantage of this offer. We will put this in our show description, our YouTube, and our podcast. But it's huntakiller.com/majority for 20% off your first box. They send you a box of all these clues and stuff. It's pretty cool. huntakiller.com/majority. Also, don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority. Get 10% off. You can get the Majority Report blend. Today is Monday. Tomorrow will be Tuesday. Michael, what will happen on that day?
What will happen on that day?
In the evening.
In the evening at 7 p.m. on the Michael Brooks Show YouTube channel and on Patreon, Brian Mayer will join us. We're going to be talking about not only, of course, the revelations coming out of Brazil that sort of validate the coverage we've done from the beginning on Lula being a political prisoner, but he was supposed to get a Supreme Court hearing tomorrow that had been scheduled several months ago before the story in The Intercept broke, and it just got delayed until August. And so that's, we'll talk about that and the sort of strike movement and wave in Brazil. Then Harvey Kay is going to come in studio. We're going to talk about the DLC, Third Way, the history of the Democratic Party. And of course, Harvey's super stoked about Bernie embracing the FDR legacy. So we'll talk about that. And Eugene Debs, A. Philip Randolph, patreon.com/TMBS and Michael Brooks Show on YouTube.
Jamie's not here today, but folks should go check out patreon.com/theantifada. Old Dorsey sitting in. Not to be confused with new Dorsey, who is actually now old Matt because of new Matt. Isn't that right, new Matt?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And what's happening on Literary Hangover?
Literary Hangover, we're doing Nathaniel Hawthorne's The Blithedale Romance. And we talk about the utopian socialist Charles Fourier to sort of set the context there, which you might have heard of because he inspired the Situationists, Sam.
Fourier.
Yeah, and he was kind of he's pretty out there kind of guy, but he inspired these what were called phalanxes where people could start their own little communes, and Brook Farm was one in America that was founded by the Transcendentalists, and Hawthorne went there, and then he only lasted a summer and then went home because he was tired of feeding cows. But we talk about that book. It's a satire of socialists. It's Hawthorne at his most anti-communist. There's one guy who's the main character, sort of an incel guy, who thinks that women just like to do political reform because they're not getting pregnant. There's another guy named Hollingsworth who sort of he threatens physical violence if women ever accomplish feminism. So there's some interesting characters in that. So check that out.
Exactly, all that existed before the internet. It's just we weren't. You had to like actually like make a slight bit of effort to find out about it.
I'm going to get my quill. And threaten you.
Exactly. Quick break. Fun half. Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh.
Rand Paul. I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you. You fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up. Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.